Good evening. Welcome to the Salyer Report. Today is Thursday, February 8th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. Tonight, I'm headed to the Netherlands tomorrow for 2 weeks. I'm going to swing down on a road trip to Basel, Switzerland to interview the great Thomas Meyer. We've had so much success with those interviews, and there's a lot to talk to Thomas about, so I'm looking forward to that. I want to welcome new subscribers. We're getting a lot of new subscribers. Please check out Salyer Core Concepts. It's in the latest annual wrap-up, but it's also, if you just do a search on the website, you can find it, or if you click on the little Just a Taste box, there'll be a link to Salyer Core Concepts. That'll help introduce you to a lot of the core concepts we use at Salyer. Free Ross Ulbricht. We did a special report this week, an interview with Lynn Ulbricht, Ross Ulbricht's mother. Ross was prosecuted in the famous Silk Road case. It's as bad a case of prosecutorial abuse as I've ever seen. They have a petition before the Supreme Court. I'm extremely hopeful. I'd love to see something get done. I'd love to see Ross Ulbricht walk a free man. If you look at what they tried to do to sort of corner Binny, it failed. If they look at what they did to corner me, it failed. They pulled it off with Ross Ulbricht, and it's horribly, it's just a very ugly story. Anyway, so take a listen. It's a remarkable situation, and anything you can do to help, send on the link, say a prayer, make a donation. No amount is too small. The more people who participate, the more the people who give big money watch and care about that. So every prayer, every dime is important. Our theme tonight is building the grand illusion. The Missing Money Limited Modified Hangouts go into hyperdrive. In all the years that I have spent now for almost 20 years trying to get traction on the fact that money is disappearing out of federal accounts, I have never seen the deep state, and in this sense, I would count the major institutional or the people who run the biggest pools of intergenerational capital in this country, and the Department of Defense push back as significantly as they have. This is a full court press across all the moneyed parts of the establishment. They understand they have a problem, and they're going to bury it in process and complexity, and they're going to throw a lot of money around to a lot of people. To make things, I call it pouring saltwater taffy in the engine, just get everything grinding around in complexity and modified hangouts while they recook the books, and which is important to do because if you look at how much money they're pouring down the military budget, it's very hard to justify these kinds of massive increases, not just in America in front of citizens, but in front of all the institutional investors globally who ultimately, one way or another, whether it's through debasement or buying treasuries or financing this. We see Ernst & Young come out with an $800 million problem audit. And Zero Hedge once again posted it. You know, Zero Hedge will never post anything about the Skidmore report, but they will post all the modified hangouts, and it's really fun because it's helping me figure out who's always had them on the leash. I knew it was somebody, but it was hard to see. Anyway, but the posters have noticed, and the posters are making riotous comments about the fact that Zero Hedge is promoting all the limited modified hangouts. And but there was a very funny dialogue, and in fact, I took a cut and paste and put it in our subscriber input, but it was very gratifying for me because what I'm seeing is people see the game. You know, you've got very smart posters. They understand money. They understand business. And they're connecting the dots. They're seeing the game. And it's, for me, it's personally very gratifying to see it. And I'm laughing out loud. It's very funny. Their dialogue is, these guys pull no punches. And they, the thing that's most gratifying is they understand the punchline of my pension presentation, which is if you have $50 trillion of bailouts and missing money, all of which had no legal authorization or contract to require it to be paid, that is 10 times as great as the supposed $5 trillion underfunding of the pension funds. So as I say, there's no problem funding the pension funds. There's a plan to not fund them. And that's creating, I would say, a crisis, but it's not a real crisis. It's a plan. As I always said, they'd rather buy more space program than pay for nursing homes. One of sort of the if the missing money story was a was in the Caddyshack movie, then the gopher in Caddyshack, the missing money equivalent of the gopher in Caddyshack, is Chuck Spinney. His name is Franklin C. Spinney. He was a DOD analyst, and whenever the missing money story sort of got big, Chuck was sort of pulled out as the official DOD whistleblower. He worked in the secretary's office, so he can't be much of a whistleblower. I assure you, they don't let Bill Binney into the head of the NSA's office to work there. So they'd pull out Chuck Spinney, and he'd do Bill Moyer. And he ran a hit on me in London with a London firm. It's a very funny story. Sometime I'll tell the whole story, maybe when I get Skidmore back on. And but, they would pull him out, and he'd pour the salt water to, oh, there's not really a problem. It's hundreds of millions. The systems don't talk to each other. It's the same old, same old. So Chuck Spinney's out and about and doing his thing. And then you have a task force now. Bill Bergman, who I like very much and I've had on the Salera Report, works at something called Truth in Accounting in Chicago. And now they have a Defense Department Accounting Advisory Committee, DDAAC, they just announced yesterday. And if you look at it, what are they going to do? Are they going to figure out where the $6.5 trillion went in 2015 and get it back? No. No, they're not going to do that. Are they going to look at what the Federal Reserve's involvement is and who the contractors are and whether or not the Federal Reserve and their banks as the government depository should be audited on all of these transactions and whether they're liable? Are they going to figure that out? No. They're going to educate citizens about DOD accounting. They're going to issue policy pronouncements. And when we have an audit of 2017, they're going to comment on that. You can't make this stuff up. And so the establishment is going to spend a lot of time to pour saltwater taffy in and saltwater taffy this to death. And so, now here's what's interesting. If you look at how much sort of saltwater taffy is coming out on the overt side of the equation, there's also, I'm getting hit, Skidmore is getting the establishment stuff. I tend to get the disinformation on the covert side. And so, we have white hat reports and secret trading programs. And, it's just more and more obfuscation, disinformation, and again, pouring saltwater taffy into the engine. And but the reality is, after 20 years of living through these cycles, my intention is to simply keep turtling along and finding those people of integrity who really want to figure out and fix the problem. And of course, I never give up, and I'm not giving up now, and I don't think it's hopeless whatsoever. I think this is a spiritual war, and we can win it. It's a question of gathering a sufficient number of forces and really getting something done. What's interesting this time is if you look at the amount of pushback and how much time and money across the board is being spent, what it tells me is there's a real concern in the body politic of the big money in behind the deep state. And that's what's very interesting. And my guess is what they're really concerned about is global investors. We sent out a new update to our whole network on the series on federal finances that one of our law firms wrote, a wonderful team, Ferry and Lori. And they've written three, one on the Constitution Appropriation Clause, one on the federal the statutes behind federal finances and all the laws on federal finances, which are quite good. And then finally, the statutory framework for the black budget. And that's a very good primer on the background of all the laws related to these financial issues. And they even include a mention, a stopgap funding provision was put into the stopgap funding that allowed them for that 2 weeks to not report to the black budget to the House Select and Senate Select Committee. And you look at it and you think, I wonder if they authorized, the spending of $21 trillion during that period. That would be a great catch-all. Just put in a little legal, document, making it all legal as though you didn't report it during that period, but it was all legal because you didn't have to. Kind of wonder what funny business went on. The new budget deal is 652 pages. I skimmed the whole thing, couldn't find any extension of that provision, but who knows, it could be buried way deep. We thought the two-year budget deal was going to go through, but then late or this morning, the federal government shut down. Well, early Friday morning, the government shut down. I'm recording after midnight because Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, held up the vote in the Senate, a very brave thing to do. And because if you look at what's going on in the budget, it's truly out of control. We're not reengineering. We're not coming up with an economic plan in and around the budget that's really going to get America from here to there. We're simply throwing more money at the problem, and it's just not going to work. It'll work politically for some period of time, but of course, you continue with a highly negative return on investment, and as an economic matter, it's not going to make sense. In this vein, I posted a link to a wonderful document, a wonderful article written by Amy Baker Benjamin, who's a legal scholar, American, teaching in Auckland. I'm going to interview her when I'm in New Zealand, hopefully in May. It's called The Many Faces of Secrecy, and she goes into depth about what's been happening with outsourcing operations and how that fits into making this huge national security state very, very secret. She goes into many of the legal issues, and it's a very nice dovetail when you add it to our federal financial series. It really shows you many of the legal issues. She used to be an attorney at the Department of Justice, which shows you great people can come out of the Department of Justice. Anyway, The Many Faces of Secrecy, Lawrence Wilkerson put me onto it. His university journal is publishing it. And Lawrence is going to come on in March and brief us about sort of what he thinks of what's happening in national security. So I'm very, very interested in that. He was very excited about the article. He told me about it in March, but took a while for it to get peer-reviewed and published. So take a look at it. It'll have a Soleri Gold Star in it, The Many Faces of Secrecy by Amy Baker Benjamin. Anyway, missing money, pouring saltwater taffy, the budget doesn't make sense. Rand Paul saying it, you know, God bless him. He's trying to get it to turn around. Unfortunately, everybody agrees in the American system that one way to solve all political programs is to vote for more money for all of us, whether or not it has a positive or negative return. Money in markets, tough 2 weeks in the markets. The U.S. dollar index bouncing up a little bit. We're now down 1.86% for the year. Fixed income getting clearly clocked by higher interest rates. The long treasury ETF TLT down 6.25%. That's giving up 2/3, 75% of the gains. Last year it was up 8.95% last year. The intermediate down 2.85%, which is giving up all of its gains from last year. And the bond aggregate down 2%, which is giving up 2/3 of its 3.61 gains. And junk, finally, it closed last year with a 6% return. Now it's down 2%. But clearly, interest rates are hitting hard. It's hitting both bonds and stocks. Stocks usually, you've heard me say many times, can take 150 basis point rise within a year and handle it just fine. Not all stocks. The REITs have gotten hit hard. They're very interest rate sensitive. The S&P giving up now more than its full gains for the year. It's down 3.46% for the year. Again, it was up 21.7%. So you're way, way ahead of where we were at the beginning of last year. Anyway, if you look at all the charts, most charts are now down through their 50-day moving average. And a few down through their 200-day average, but we'll see where it heads down. The home builders now down 7.3%. Europe down, VGK, the ETF, down 2.59%. Germany down 3.54%, so approximately where the U.S. is down. The developed markets minus North America down 2.86%. Large cap China is now finally down. They're down 0.25%. They were up 36.22% last year. China small caps down 3.28%. They were up 37.5% last year. And emerging markets down 3%. They were up 37.28%. Commodities now down. Commodities were perking up, but they're down minus 1.8%. Oil's still up 0.5%, so I still think commodities are headed higher this year. Gold is up 1%, so gold's holding, and silver getting whacked down 3.31%. If you look at the charts, almost everything is not yet oversold. Now, one chart that is definitely has lower lows, lower highs and lower lows as it trends down is Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin bounced a little bit over 8,000. We saw Goldman Sachs, who I hate to admit, but has a great record of predicting many of these things, come out and say many cryptocurrencies were going to zero, exactly what you told, what you heard from me when I did Bitcoin the op last year. That's a great summary of the cryptocurrency situation. A lot of it is coming true. But you see the move on Bitcoin as soon as January 1 happened. The UK Mint comes out with a gold-backed cryptocurrency, and now we see the IRS starting to, or CPA is starting to, you know, send a document saying, I want to see your ledgers for all your Bitcoin and cryptocurrency trading. And the regulators are going to keep moving in all year long. But the reality is most cryptocurrencies will not be able to compete against a sovereign cryptocurrency or a gold-backed cryptocurrency, and that's what we're going to see more and more of. And the regulators are going to keep moving in. Now, I don't begin to believe that Bitcoin's going to go to zero yet, because if you look at what it's being used as a money laundering device by the people who can determine what happens to Bitcoin, why would they give it up, particularly before the election? It's just too good for money laundering. So I see Bitcoin is still having some legs. But if you look at the charts, it's clearly lower lows and lower highs. So again, you know, get your profits out, play from your winnings, and keep clawing money out as you make money. Ultimate sovereign and asset-backed cryptocurrency is going to squeeze out what the regulators don't destroy. So that's the net-net. Let's talk about the markets. My take is we've got a very high chance for a 10 to 20% correction. You've got to be sick of hearing me say that we're way overdue for a 10 or 20% correction. I think it's here. There are just too many people who can make money having a 10 to 20% correction. I mean, Wall Street's going to make a lot more money if we get a 10 to 20% correction. If we do, it's going to be a real opportunity to buy in the bottom, because I think we're in a very clear bull pattern. And a lot of people have been looking to get in, and that was hard to do because last year turned out to be much better than we all expected. The hard part's going to be to know when to start to buy. If you're aggressive, you start buying down 10%. If you're conservative, you wait for it to bottom and then start to do a higher high and a higher low coming out at the bottom. Now, I give it 80% chance we got a 10 to 20% correction ahead. And remember, it's always elevator down, escalator up. So don't be afraid if the, you know, if the straight down is hard. I think there's about a 15% that the geopolitics get out of hand and cause real problems, and things get very messy before we you know, cooler heads prevail and the bull reasserts. So maybe that could even take you down 25%, or it just looks real chaotic and messy and nerve-wracking. And then 5%, which is the Paul Craig Roberts scenario, the crazies get us in real trouble. Right now, what you're looking at is the national security states wants all the profits of war, but they don't want a war. First of all, they're not going to win the war, but dangerous things can happen and get out of control. So they don't want a war. They just want everyone to prepare for war, and they want the profits of war without having a war. What Paul Craig Roberts very nicely says in his latest article, and we posted it up at under News Trends and Stories, things go wrong. And that's what Saker says in her interview tonight. You know, when you get that many weapons, that many people, things go wrong. And so it's, you know, unfortunately, it's a dangerous situation. So what does that mean to you? If I'm in the market and I'm long, I'm a hold. I'm not selling here. You just, you know, now if you have selected positions you want to get out of, you have losses and you want to take it, fine. But I'm long. I just think you don't know how to market time corrections in a bull market, and historically, I just think that strategy hasn't worked. If I'm in the market and hedged, I'm going to look for the possibility of selling my hedge after 10% or down. The beauty of being hedged is you can sell your hedge if you can time the bottom and then use the money to buy stocks cheap, it's the perfect way to go. Now, some people want to stay hedged because the market's so crazy. But you know, if you're willing to go long, there's going to be an opportunity. If you're not in the market and you want to be, you know, I would be sitting in cash or cash equivalents. I would not be trying to move into bonds. Bonds are going down with stocks. Think of it as like the air coming out of the bubble is what we're seeing. So I'm not interested in buying bonds. Just staying on the sidelines. So cash and cash equivalents. And it's an opportunity to get back in. And we'll just have to see where it goes. There's several pressures going on that could really pull the air out. First of all, the Fed and the central banks are unwinding their positions or beginning to run them off. So don't be surprised if the lack of central bank methadone being infused into the market doesn't have an impact. The second thing is we see new technology really having deflationary impacts. Harry Blaser and I did a great interview last year on the Amazon Whole Foods deal and what it was doing to the grocery business. We just saw Amazon, J.P. Morgan, and Buffett come out with a plan to basically squeeze the profits out of healthcare. You know, it's unfortunate that we didn't do this before. Now we're going to do it because the big corporations can make money on their stocks doing it. So now we're going to let it go forward. And clearly, that announcement was dovetailed with Trump's announcement about squeezing out the pharmaceuticals. But here's the thing. For many years now, you know, basically 2012, 13, 14, healthcare carried the stock market and has really pulled the stock market along. So if you're going to squeeze out that whole world with new technology, and you clearly are, I should mention the Economist cover this week is you doctor, meaning you got to be your own doctor, and that's what you've heard certainly on the Salier Report over the last year. So that's very sort of deflationary for many different industries, and healthcare is certainly one of them. So look for new technology and the Amazon effect to be continually happening. And then, of course, rising interest rates. So you've got a lot of money repatriating into the United States. You've got the defense budget hitting hard on basically financing it through debasement, whether it's printing currency or treasuries or stealing money, whichever you're doing. And so that's going to put a lot of inflationary pressures on expenses, including labor, and that's going to hit the bottom line. So you see a tremendous number of pressures on both revenues and expenses. But the reality is if you look at the repatriation, the repositioning, and what the administration has done with taxes, it should be rah-rah for business. Now, what's the big problem? The big problem is the defense budget and therefore the U.S. budget make absolutely no sense. Rather than do a re-engineering of our vision of our military role in the world and how we defend the dollar, we're just spending money. We're just throwing money at it. There's no re-engineering. We're just going to spend to make sure we rebuild the line military, which in fact has been stripped. We're going to cover up the $21 trillion and, pour saltwater taffy on that. There's no vision of how we're going to get America to an economic vehicle that makes sense. And part of the reason is if you look at the politics, you have massive amounts of the establishment deeply dependent on the national security state. The question is, what is that about? You can't re-engineer it without being honest about what it's really about. And one of the things it's really about is an enormous payroll gravy train for the establishment and the corporate stocks and the stock market. And so you're kind of addicted, and your population is addicted, and you don't have a vision of success or a culture that can pull everybody together and say, you know, let's do one for the Gipper. And so Saker, in the interview tonight, when he says this reflects weakness, is right. And I think it's clear that Trump is not yet able to find a politically feasible way to get on a path that leads to some kind of economic success other than, you know, if you don't do what we say, we'll drop a nuclear bomb on you. Part of the problem is the way to deal with secrecy, one of the ways to cover up secrecy is with massive complexity. Complexity is used to control, it's used to protect the national security state, and it's having enormously harmful impacts on productivity in the United States in the general population. Some of it shows up on the bottom line, but it really shows up in family budgets, family households. And, you know, part of it is we have peak everything. I'll never forget being in the Gold Conference down in New Orleans, and somebody asked the Jimmy Rogers, the famous investor, if he was worried about peak oil. He said, "Oh, no, I'm not worried about peak oil. I'm worried about peak everything." You know, there's 7 or 8 billion people on the planet, and we're shrinking. You know, we're shrinking natural resources. It's why they keep talking about mining asteroids. At some point, you've got to go get more stuff someplace else. Trump is under tremendous pressure. I was waiting to see whether the passage of tax reform would ease up the pressure. Part of what's going on, if you look at what's happening with the FISA memo and the intelligence coming out of the FISA court, more information on the Uranium One deal, the extent of the corruption at the Department of Justice and the FBI is significant. We have serious criminal violations, lying to the court, interference with elections, possible treason relative to a sitting president. So these are very, very serious criminal violations. And if you look at how they're happening, it really threatens the integrity of the U.S. federal enforcement, which, as far as I'm concerned, was the sheriff of Nottingham, you know, had become the sheriff of Nottingham long ago. Bill Binney continues to give great interviews that explains these issues very well. So if you want to plug into what's really going on, I would absolutely check out some of his latest interviews. We've been putting them up on the website. What Binney indicates is there's a lot more to come out on this. I'm sure there is. And between the Mueller investigation, which looks to me like it's going no place fast, and what's coming out on the Department of Justice and FBI, the whole thing is just very misfortunate. The latest Kiplinger points out that the White House is very shorthanded. It's the most shorthanded of any White House in nearly 4 decades. Of 61 top officials, 21 have quit or have been fired or reassigned, which is unprecedented. So the next closest was President Reagan at just 17%. So this is a lot of people, and we have the White House counsel and national security advisor are said to be looking to leave. And you've got one of the things that was really disturbing is Rob Porter, who, very important for Kelly's operation, resigned after accusation of abuse. And if you look at the pattern, my guess is what you're looking at is that one after another of Trump's people are being targeted and literally campaign war gamed out. So I just think it's very a very unhealthy situation, particularly coming into the 2018 campaigns. One guess I have, unfortunately, was just out in California and then flew back through Dallas. And if you just look at lots of different things going on locally in Los Angeles, in Dallas, in Memphis, in Chicago, in different ones of the big cities, I think the push by Sessions and Trump to round up and get MS-13, the Mexican drug cartels, or the Latin American cartels, I should say, because they really came out of L.A., to get them shut down is basically an attack on the Bush-Clinton drug syndicate and huge covert cash flows. It's a war, if you will, over the narcotics trafficking money. And basically, those operations are financing establishments in all these big cities. And those establishments are bipartisan. And it looks to me like, you know, basically there is a deep bipartisan threat. And if you look at Trump and his polls, it makes him vulnerable to that group. If you look at what happened to Nixon and how Nixon got pushed out, one of the reasons he got pushed out was he started doing a real drug war on drugs, and it really cut into folks' profits. So if you look at who was making money on that network and how much of that money was flowing to establishment that you might think is not involved. And I hate to bring this up again, but of course, pedophilia is involved in all those networks. And that is a big and very, very profitable business. So if you take a look at what's a very very unhealthy network of across the country, as to the extent that Department of Justice and Trump push back on that, and I think they are, it's going to trigger some very serious bipartisan establishment pushback, because the establishment is deeply participatory in those cash flows, and I don't see they don't seem to have a way to change that. Now, what I don't know is, you know, who, if you look at what Trump's up with, I don't know what networks are planning on picking up that business. Are they really planning on reducing narcotics trafficking and pedophilia? Or is it going to be different, you know, networks that go, that move in and pick up that business? So who knows what's going on the covert side? All I'm telling you is, when you look at a lot of pushback coming from the establishment, don't think that it's because they don't like his tweets. It's because he's cutting off the covert revenue flows that are financing establishments, whether it's out of the national security budget and the missing money or the narcotics trafficking. And it's really interesting, because one thing that would help us tremendously in this country is if this all became transparent. And the more these silly fights break out, the more, and people start asking about, well, how does the money work? The more it's going to become more and more obvious. Anyway, so covert flows are pinching, and the establishment, it's making the establishment mad. 41 Republicans, as of now, are leaving, 16 Democrats from Congress and Senate. Why are they doing it? I think it's many different reasons. One, it's dangerous. If you look at what happened with the train accident, if that train had derailed at 70 miles an hour, you could have had 100 or 70 dead congressmen and plus family. The baseball game shooting, the minority leader shot, Rand Paul getting trounced by his neighbor from behind. I would guess it was a mind control operation. So it's dangerous. It's difficult. Things are unpleasant. People are angry. It's hard to get anything done. And then, of course, there's a lot of dirt. If you look at some of the people who are leaving, I think they can't afford to have, as the meeting thing happens, people really start throwing real dirt, and they can't afford to live through the real dirt. They just, you know, and if you look at how much money they can take with them when they go, there's no reason to stay. So I think it's a combination of things, but the reality is we're in the middle of serious wars, and as the empire gets weaker and weaker, we run the risk that those wars are going to get very dangerous. And unfortunately, a bipartisan push to get rid of Trump could be very, very damaging to the country. So, you know, if anything, it would be wonderful if there was a way the establishment and Trump could work together. Part of the problem is Trump's an entrepreneur. He does not know how to run a large government, let alone the largest government in the world. As I always said, it's not an entry level position, and so he gives his enemies too many opportunities. Our hero this week are the unnamed commentators who discussed the missing money on Zero Hedge. Again, I did a cut and paste of some of the dialogue from the $800 million Ernst & Young audit story and put it in subscriber input on Solari. And it just goes to show you there are a tremendous number of people who are smart and have done a lot of homework and made an effort to connect the dots, watch a lot of information, digest, make sense of it. And something pretty wonderful is happening. And so I would just like to thank them for their deep curiosity and interest in finding reality. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to talk about The Americans, which is a longstanding TV series about two KGB spies living in Northern Virginia. A lot of money to do something very entertaining. You know, and I hate to say it, it's just more propaganda to keep the Cold War going and make it happen and look at things in a what can be a very misleading way. The Russians are dangerous. They live right next door. It's very entertaining. So it's, you know, somebody's done a good job of exploring many of the issues of trying to live a covert life in an overt world. And one of the things that happens is they live in Virginia across from a FBI counterintelligence agent, which makes it much more interesting. But it reminds me of Peggy Noonan's fabulous editorial about the new movie on the Washington Post. She says, you know, it's bad enough we have fake news, but now we have entertainment reinforcing fake news. You know, and it just keeps leading people into a world that's not true and doesn't help them deal with reality. So, but I must say it's very entertaining. Our interview tonight is our first quarterly interview with a Saker, and it was a fascinating experience, particularly because we had so much interference and problems on this interview. I won't bore you with all the details. One was we put up the interview, and then the site mysteriously, our website went down, but we were able to get it. We have a great systems admin. We were able to get it back up right away. But politically, I mean, this interview took me a couple of extra hours because we had so much hassle and pushback. So I love talking with a Saker, and one of the occasions of this was his new book. As you know, I absolutely loved his first book, which is a collection of sort of the best work that he publishes on his site. And the second book is also great. It's not as funny as the first, but it's very, very insightful to help you understand Russia, some of the different issues, and very much the military baseball on the relationship between Russia and the United States. So it takes you much deeper into the specifics of what's going on, and it gets you out of the sort of drumbeat one-track thinking. Because of the tensions right now, Saker was very interested in getting this available to his readership quickly. His website is open to the public, and I agree with him. I think this one is important. So especially given all the noise and problems we had. So I decided, okay, we'll keep it private for a week and then make it available to the public. So a week from now, if you want to offer it to your friends as something, if they're interested in this topic, I would really encourage it. I posted, instead of posting a review of his new book, which we talk about, I wrote the foreword to it, and so are one of the forewords. There are two forewords. So right underneath the Salyer Report commentary, if you just go down the middle column, there's a picture of the graphic on this book, and then you can read my foreword. It's right there. And you can buy the book in PDF form. It's not expensive. But it's always a danger, as you know, when I print out his books, because they are long. But very juicy, very interesting, unbelievably informative. If you want to get educated about Russia, about Islam, about many of the deep and old issues between the European elites and Russia, or between the United States, the Anglo-American Alliance, and Russia, boy, it's so rich. He's just a very rich, complex thinker, and it's fantastic background to help you understand current events. Ask Catherine. Wow, we only have one question this week. I can't believe it. Normally, I get hit with, you know, many, many questions. So I think you're all watching the market. Or we've been having a lot of great dialogues on subscriber input and on the different commentaries, so maybe we're doing more through the website. Anyway, hi, Catherine. Regarding local parasites, forwarding you a newsletter from our local community foundation. It is an article about funding resilience. It talks about all those dealing with trauma in our town. What it doesn't say is how many targeted individuals are being treated each day by the mental institution, who is now doubling in size and is the size of two Walmarts in a town of 100,000 people. In the first years they were open, I think 2008, they made $450 million. Halliburton is headquartered here. The top two doctors are for the University of Pittsburgh and are interested in interventional psychiatry research. Read remote non-consensual psychosurgery. See the Mind Stealer, Psychosurgery and Mind Control. I bought that book. A prescient book that documents how huge money awaits those who study psychosurgery, a way to surgically control the dissident, dumb down the population. I have experienced this unspeakable crime as a targeted individual. Here is an important video on the promotion of trauma by our local news station. This is how our community is complicit in taking itself down through social engineering. I find it absolutely shocking. Okay, this is a problem everywhere. We are all in profound disassociation. I always say the swamp is from sea to shining sea. It's in every community and touches almost every family. There is a profound disassociation by everyone at the bottom. So when these things are going on, like targeting individuals with electronic, literally torture and abuse, you know, we have a mental institute. We study it. Again, it's the saltwater taffy thing. So this is saltwater taffy for targeted individuals, and the establishment turns it into something for academics and doctors to study, and it's a business, and you see it all around the country. It's a business model of getting everybody making money, imprisoning or torturing other people, or dealing drugs to their kids, and on and on and on. And there's profound disassociation by everyone. It's interesting, with 3,100 counties, if we just heal the disassociation and get everybody to re-engineer locally, that's how you solve the problem. You can't solve it from Washington. Anyway, but, you know, as I said, are the task force getting together and finding the missing money, figuring out how to do a tax escrow? No, they're starting a task force and issuing policy papers until the next audit, when they'll comment on the next audit in the future. Why? Because they get paid to pour intellectual saltwater taffy on the situation, whether it's targeted individuals, whether it's narcotics trafficking, whether it's missing money, and on and on and on. What's amazing about how much money is being stolen by the establishment is they can afford to create massive job programs using, of course, government money, taxpayer money, to keep people busy and pouring saltwater taffy into all these issues. And the minute you get a critical mass of 5 to 10% of the local people in a county who says, you know something, it's got to stop. We got to turn this around. That's when it's going to start to change. Okay, that's it for this evening. Next week, we have an unbelievably exciting program. We have commissioned Ulrich Groniger, who is a wonderful researcher, journalist, teacher. I study the Pistis Sophia with her. I always head to Europe to go to Pistis workshops, and Ulrich is the extraordinary intellectual attraction. She is an amazing, amazing thinker, and a very curious, wonderful, just an amazing intellect. I asked Ulrich if she would do a quarterly report called Future Science, because if you look at what's going on in science, it's very exciting. There are unbelievable discoveries and things happening. And so I said, Ulrich, look, do a Soleri report, do it quarterly. So we have Harry Blaser doing the food series. I want you to do Future Science, and I want you to focus entirely on what you find important and interesting. I want to know what Ulrich Groniger finds important and interesting. So this is her first one. She wanted to do video, so you can get it in video or audio or text form. And it's called Muons and Neutrinos, Excitement and Excitation, and it's a doozy. I'm very, very excited about this. I think it's really going to be extraordinarily inspiring and absolutely fascinating. And then the following week, February 22nd, is going to be amazing. It's Bill Nyman. Bill Nyman started Nyman Ranch, was one of the great providers of meats. He's a rancher and an entrepreneur, and he really is the godfather of grass-fed. And so he and Harry Blaser are very good friends. And when it comes to meats, Bill Nyman is the top of the top. He knows more about the whole business of meats and food. It's just an amazing guy to sit down with. So that's going to be a very exciting interview as well. So until next week, when I speak to you from Skavoren in the Netherlands, Robert Duper and I will be heading out to Cafe Max and having a blast up in the northern part of the Netherlands. Until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.